Hello, everybody, and welcome to MindBodyGreen's beauty podcast, Clean Beauty School. I am your host and MindBodyGreen's beauty director, Alexandra Engler. On this podcast, we explore beauty through the lens of well-being. And on today's episode, I am having on Lisa Goodman. She is the founder of Good Skin Clinics, and the work that she is doing there is so innovative in the field of aesthetics and facial rejuvenation. And I've had the pleasure of visiting her twice now. So I know all about the incredible work that she's doing, and I cannot wait to share her insights on this podcast. So without further ado, Lisa, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for joining me again. I always like to start these episodes by allowing the guest to, you know, introduce themselves and share a little bit about their story and their journey into medicine. And, you know, specifically for you, your journey into aesthetic medicine.
Yeah. So around 18 is when my mother was diagnosed with a skin condition called vitiligo. And I actually had a dream that I owned a skincare clinic and we served juice. And because I always saw the connection between wellness and skin conditions and mental state and the things that we can do at home to help that. I saw her go through her own journey at a time where people weren't as interested in sprouted bread and gluten-free and immune markers. This was 23 years ago. And so that was my first kind of introduction to that. And then that faded away and I did college and all that good stuff and went into dermatology, and the aesthetics field was just starting. And I wanted to go work in dermatology and work with one of the best dermatologists. And so I was in Santa Monica working with some of the best dermatologists at the time and running an acne rosacea clinic and also learning aesthetics. And I was there for about 8 years, and I was operating in a very American style aesthetics where you go in, you get more aesthetic treatment where you're like, I want lips or I want a cheek and I'm going to get a little Botox. And we were seeing all these fabulous celebrities, and I just thought, this is how you do it. I'm working for the absolute best people in the field and this is how they're doing it. So this must be how you do it. And then I had the opportunity to shadow a plastic surgeon in France who ended up becoming a very strong mentor, and two of them, and they wrote the foreword for the book that I have coming out about the work that we've been doing here. And that they were very inspirational, and the way that they were coming at this industry was really more holistic, and it was more about looking at sources of aging in the bone, the muscle, the skin, the fat, the fascia, and then assigning a treatment. And so and then the aesthetic came into there where people looked like themselves. They were slowing down their signs of aging. They were improving their facial harmony and balance, but it wasn't through a purely aesthetic lens. It was first through this holistic, take care, let's look at the problem lens. And then because of that, the work has a different outcome that you're seeing over time. And so when I saw that, I went back to my previous mentor and I said, I know the secret to why French women don't look injected. We have to change. And I was in this office really trying to practice this different method, and it didn't work. And so then I opened a one-room clinic, and it spread really quickly. I thought people in Los Angeles wouldn't understand, and they did. And then I was still going to France every month, and I have a dog that I'm deeply attached to. He's like a child. And we would stop in New York, and then we built a New York practice because of that. And so we now have a book coming out. It's 10 years of the method, and we are able to show women's photos through the years, age 42 to 75. And you're able to basically see that they don't look different. They look themselves, and they look age appropriate to themselves, and we're able to really give some data behind people really wondering, you know, not just what do I look like if I do start, but what do I look like if I keep going. And in the book, I really share some of the pitfalls I've learned along the way and where I decided to recommit to the method. And so I share the successes, I share the non-successes, And that for me has really, in the last few years, made me recommit to the type of work I'm doing and the type of work I'm doing in the community and training others to do.
Yeah. You know, when did you decide that you wanted to write this book, and what was that journey like? Because I can imagine that's a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah. And it's a visual book. So it's a bit of a more of a catalog with inside information. I hit 10 years and I started to have women that had worked with me for about 12, and I started to have data on them, photos, tracking every 4 months. I was able to sit and look at the data, and I had a few people that I actually felt, hey, I think we've gone off track. I think that we need a course correct. And so in looking at the data and looking over my work and even the work of my clinic over those years and doing some amount of internal correction, it was where we put all the pieces together and said, like, the method works, we have to stick to it. And we have to always take it back to diagnosing bone, muscle, skin, fat, and fascia, thinking long-term, thinking of treatments long-term, thinking if we put a treatment here, how does it affect the client to the best of our knowledge? And we don't always know everything, but to the best of our knowledge as clinicians in 5 or 10 years. And so that kind of data example, looking at our own work, really spending time even outside of patient care to just observe, look at the process, look at the progress. I think that was where even as a clinic, we had a full internal regroup about how we were going to work as clinicians.
Yeah, you're mentioning what is the good skin method. And, you know, I think I'm getting an idea of what it is, and our audience can get an idea of what it is. But to set the stage, I think we need the full definition of how you view the good skin method. How does your clinic operate?
Yes, thanks. So everyone, we put it down to 6 steps. If you've never gone to an aesthetic clinic in America, it's going to look a little bit more. You go in. This is how most clinics operate, not all, most. You're going to go in and it's going to have an aesthetic lens. You need higher cheekbones, you need lips, or I want higher cheekbones or I want lips. And that's the aesthetic lens. And then the difference with our clinic, so you're going to come in, we're going to ask you first to bring in a photo of yourself younger, which we don't always need. We're going to assess your bone, muscle, skin, fat, and fascia with palpation, with a series of 3D photos, and we're going to create a healthy aging plan. So our job as clinicians is to take that bone, muscle, skin, fat, fascia, create a healthy aging plan in which we prioritize where do we need to start to improve the aging that you're seeing on your face. And then that's just the first 3 steps in the method. Then you have, what do you do for years 1 to 5? So like, it's easy for a method to work the first time, but then how do you keep it working? And how do you keep people on the same page with the plan? And that's a lot of patient tracking. So before our clients even come in for the day, we're actually reviewing their photos. We have a very, very stable, true-to-life photo room, 2 different types of cameras, 3D photos. And we're reviewing their progress over the years. Always, we call it a retrospect, going back to where they were, looking at them dynamically, sometimes using video. And that's the second half of the method, is patient tracking, how we continue to work together, how we continue to look and track our patients that really become, you know, more than clients. They become a part of this whole philosophy of how we're treating. And and does that sum it up? Do you think that makes it clear?
And you know, we're going to get into the muscle, fascia, and fat, and et cetera, of it all. But I think one thing that you mentioned that I just really quickly want to highlight, because I think it's really interesting, is, you know, the second half of it being about tracking and progress and looking back. And I think that is such an important part of this conversation, because one thing that I think happens all too often is when people start down this journey is they lose track, right? And they forget what they looked like, and they, you know, they want bigger lips, and then all of a sudden the lips that they have now with filler aren't big enough. Or, you know, there's so many different examples of how this can live in real life. And I think the fact that you look
back at the work, the past work is really, really fascinating. Was that something that you've always done, or was that something that only came through time? You know, where does that element come from? Because I think it's just, it's such an interesting part of this bigger picture that not a lot of people do.
Right. I think there's so much work that goes on before a patient comes in behind the scenes in our clinic, a little bit more like maybe a functional medicine clinic where we're looking at all these things, prepping. We have always done patient tracking. We've just gotten more and more particular about it. You know, even on our website, our before and afters, our videos. It's very important to see people in dynamic motion as best we can. And so I would just say that we always use patient tracking. I always thought that that was a really big gap in terms of my ability to do my work. Someone has to be the stable guide. And then there has to be a set of stable, everyone has a different reality, but we have to have one that we constantly go back to. And then even with the five parts of aging, we have that baseline so that we can all look back and all say, okay, I reviewed this person's bone at this year. How is it feeling to me? How much have I corrected with filler? How much have I corrected with Sculptra? But I'm able to have baseline information between my written approach and between my visual approach. So the patient tracking is a huge part of what we do. Huge part. And if we sense that we're, because most of our clients come in every 3 to 4 months, more similar to a holistic functional practice, if we see that we're moving off course a little bit, we course correct. But what we've also seen is that, again, if you want to look yourself, then you have to replicate Mother Nature. That's a simple part of it. And so if we keep always replicating Mother Nature, we always, instead of the marketing that's being sent to us, the new this, the new that, you need this, you need that, we take all that away. And we go back to what is the problem in the room? And then we choose the newer thing and we apply it in the way that to replicate Mother Nature, we can most of the time guarantee that we are not going to look different over time. So the patient tracking is important, but it also becomes superfluous if we're actually solving root issues. Does that come together?
Yeah, it does. That's really interesting because the root issue is always going to be the root issue, no matter if you look at it right now or if you looked at it, you know, a year ago.
Yes. Now, and the only thing that will change, it say like the one variable in there that will like, okay, what change and why we still obviously need patient tracking is people's responses to things over time due to autoimmune, due to water retention, due to age, due to sleep, due to stress. We have to track those things. That's the only variable that shows up, and not on everyone, but it shows up, and then we have to understand it, manage it, maybe change from left to right a little in our treatment choices.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I want to get into the elements of aging that we've mentioned throughout this episode, or that you've mentioned throughout this episode, you know, being bone, muscles, fat, fascia, and the skin. Let's break this down a little bit more for folks, and let's talk about how these elements tend to change with age. Obviously, this is going to be different for everybody, but, you know, let's start with bone, for example. What are the ways in which bone ages in the face?
I love this. So we do know the aesthetics industry has become a very well-studied industry in terms of the science of aging. If anyone wants more explanation on this, we have an incredible visual on the website, goodskinclinics.com. It's a video and it's a great visual on how ethnicities age differently, women age differently, men age differently, in the bone, the muscle. And it's, you know, it has some anthropological basis because ethnicity is in there too. So that's kind of like that foundational learning that we teach everyone in clinic. And so quickly, women will tend to lose. And again, let me say 10, because you're right, there could be outliers still. But for the most part, we do see patterns. Women will tend to lose bone in their midface and next to their nose. And that's why women will have a longer upper lip with age. And that's one of the telltale signs of we're not even looking at, you know, we can, as babies, we can look at people's faces and know what they're feeling. And that's kind of what happens as we're older. We're able to look at a face and go young, old. And it isn't necessarily all about wrinkles. It's a lot about facial balance, position of things. And that's that same information that comes through to us. And so at an earlier age, we want to help women that we feel in this area by helping to retain bone in this area so that they don't age as quickly in this area. And then for men are more prone to under eye bags. Why? Well, they tend to lose more bone around their lateral orbital rim, their lateral eye rim, and that then gives them lack of support for the tissue there. Not all, but a lot. Ethnicities, you're going to see certain ethnicities with a very flat front facial bone. And because of that flat front facial bone, they will tend to have more jowling because you can think of it like a table. They have all this tablecloth, but they don't have a good table underneath. So their tablecloth just sinks, and it sinks in the middle, kind of downward. And so that's a quick summary of a little bit of bone differences for men, women, and ethnicities.
Okay. And how about muscle?
So muscle is interesting. Muscle, there's some new lasers coming out targeting muscle, but muscle is going to be a little bit more in the functional medicine realm because that's going to be more genetic based. So for example, in Asian countries are where we started to use jaw Botox. So people of Asian descent are going to tend to have a jaw muscle 3 times as big as someone else. And so that's where we started all this jaw Botox. But then we started jaw Botox and we said, okay, wait, we're doing jaw Botox, but when we treat the jaw, what's happening to the neck? Because those muscles are connected. What's happening to the traps? And so muscle is something that has to just be evaluated on each person because I could have, regardless of ethnicity, I could have someone who, due to Pilates or their strength training, they are recruiting certain muscles of the face in a way that is not functionally helping them age. For example, we have muscles of the face that will pull down on everything. And if you want to stay up longer, then naturally you don't want as many muscles pulling you down in the downward direction. And so you can use, instead of thinking of Botox as let's get rid of all wrinkles, which the Europeans were very smart about for a long time, which was wrinkles are a sign of life. Wrinkles are earned. Wrinkles don't make people look bad. But let's use this incredible, let's call it a neurotoxin. Let's use it as a really smart personal trainer to rehabilitate your muscles to work more in your favor over time versus thinking of it as this one shot, one and done, you know, you'll have no wrinkles and you'll look better. So that's how we use Botox, is more of a functional way to rehabilitate the muscles, but it is different person to person based on who they are, their life, a little bit of ethnicity. Men have obviously 3 times stronger muscles than women as well.
And, you know, when muscles age, is it that, you know, it's just certain muscles become weaker versus others? Is it like asymmetry thing? Is it just muscles get weaker in general?
We track 3 things. We track genetics of aging, asymmetries, and facial balance. And so asymmetries of the face will be a lot due to muscle asymmetries and muscle imbalances, which you can take a step further and often track muscle asymmetries to bone differences, which is my nerdy obsession that you can often find. But yes, asymmetries often, we can treat the muscle to help people stay more symmetric. I just treated an actor the other day that he had seen this surgeon and that surgeon and this, and he had had something cut and he had had something pulled. And he still said, I really feel uncomfortable on camera. One of my mouth goes this way and the other mouth goes this way. And I don't know what to do. And I said, let's look for the cause. It was completely muscular. And, you know, he came back singing the praises, and I was like, okay, let's just keep at it, you know. But it's so exciting when you're able to really pull it back and look at that functional issue and do something so simple and so safe that has been around a long time and been really like a neurotoxin, and use it, you know, in a 20-minute appointment. He was like, that was 10 years of searching and life-changing, and could have avoided, you know, the surgeries I was having for these asymmetries.
Yeah. You know, I think that there's so much overlap here with, I mean, obviously with the muscles on our body, but, you know, when people view the muscles in their body, like, for example, if they're working out and, you know, one half of their body is stronger than the other, they are so much more inclined to do what they have to do to course correct that, right? And I think this with the face, we forget, one, that our muscles in our face are muscles just like anybody, any other parts of our body. We have to care for them in this similar way. But two, we don't even think to course correct them in that way. Like, I just think that there's like a disconnect there. So it's really interesting, your approach in this respect.
I have scoliosis, which causes all these different muscle compensations. And so a large part of my life has been to stay out of pain. It's been to look to optimize muscles and bone and my health. And I think that has gravitated to the work we do with really looking to optimize and help people with muscle issues, and using the neurotoxin as a rehabilitative tool, and way a lot more than just a wrinkle reducer.
Okay, so fascia, this is something that in the last like 10 years, I feel like it's become such a much more buzzy topic in the wellness and beauty industry. And still, and yet there's still so much like misinformation about it, and people don't really understand what its purposes are for and how you can actually help it. So, you know, how do you approach the fascia?
The fascia is something that we're still working on optimizing our diagnosis. You know, we're starting to now use handheld ultrasound to be able to see a little bit better what we're looking at. And that's really a fascinating avenue of this field. And right now we're measuring fascia in terms of ligaments, connective tissue, things that are holding, either making the skin more loose or not holding it together. And so another example, a client came to me and she had been doing all these tightening lasers. And then she came and said, I'm doing all these tightening lasers and now I look worse. I said, let's look at this. And so it was great. They had been working on a certain level of her fascia because she was starting to get tighter. And then she started to see all her bony differences and all her volume differences or fat differences. And so I think the fascia is very important because as we're checking people, how loose they are, how much, you know, we're now as a community talking about how filler can drift. I see it drift, and how should we use it? How shouldn't we use it? So if someone has a tighter fascia, you can think of, for people listening, you can think of as the layers of a sandwich. And as you get older, these layers get farther apart. So then when we put something in between, it is more likelihood to slide. And I think it's important for no one to be afraid. I don't do any fear-mongering stuff in the clinic. We always say a filler can drift like a centimeter. It's not going to go from one part of your face to another. Unless there's one very special part of the face that could do that, but it would be rare. So in general, most of the time, filler is going to have a small drift. But if you have a loose sandwich, you're going to be more likely. Or if you sleep on your face and you're doing treatments, you're going to age more quickly. It's going to create some frictional forces on these layers of the sandwich. We're going to see more looseness. And some of this is also just genetics. Like, I do meet people that are loose but very elastic, and it's nothing that they're doing wrong. It's nothing that they need to feel bad about. It's nothing that they need to buy a ton of devices over. You know, we, for the best of our ability, can use lasers to tighten and help their sandwich be smaller so that we can limit our use of other products.
Fat. How does fat in the face change over time?
So fat is so interesting to me. So in our clinics, my clinics, the obsession is really replacing bone, because you see what happened with fat. So fat is what makes everyone terrified of the aesthetics industry. Whether it's because if a celebrity goes in for a fat injection, fat has to be put in more than we think, because some of it will go away. And so then you get photographed and the person looks like overdone. And then in a year, they look great. And then we even saw that happen with the aesthetics industry. Even 10 years ago, everyone said, let's replace all the fat. And then everyone looked overdone. And then we had this whole trend this last 2 years, which, let's dissolve all the filler. So it was really great. We never really adopt it. We don't go into any trends. So we were never like, let's replace all the fat in the face. Most of us know that there's kind of this sweet spot in life where we lose some of our baby fat, and some of those things are nice. There's a little bit more contour in some parts of the face. You know, sometimes, again, the temple should have some contour. We don't want it to be all filled up. But, you know, there's places like under the eyes. Under the eyes is your men and women. It's the first place we lose our fat pad. And that is scientifically proven. In your 20s, your under eye fat pad will recede faster than the fat pads in the rest of your face. And most of our patients come in, they want to look healthy, they want to look rested. They're working hard people, and they want to really look capable, competent, healthy. And so we will replace the fat under the eyes using either a filler or a fat type of injection, or even stem cells we'll use. And so that is an area that sometimes we really do want to replace certain parts of the fat pad of the face. But we want to be selective.
Sure. Yeah, I can imagine that's tricky to deal with.
This is another through line. That's just like when you work with someone, what is their aesthetic? It's kind of like, what art gallery are you in? And so that has a little bit more to do with being in the right clinic for your aesthetic. Our aesthetic is just largely European. I really enjoyed my time in New York. I think I get a lot of influence still in my life from that kind of age is not a bad thing aesthetic. And so I think that is a guiding force for us when we're looking what to replace. And again, the lens is, let's help people look more healthy. Let's not help people look out of age or perfect, or let's not chase that thing.
Yeah. The last element of this is the skin. So this is honestly what most people think of when they think of aging, right? Addressing the fine lines, the dark spots, et cetera. And, you know, when I speak to you, this is obviously, it's a huge part of your practice, but I don't want to say it's the last one, but it is the last one I'm addressing here. So
it's the constant. It's why we call it good skin. It's the constant. It is the through line through all of it. You know, the skin is the canvas. And so when clients come in, we diagnose elasticity, pore size, texture, fine lines. We make the skin, obviously skin really does need to largely be helped in clinic, but really also helped at home. There's only so much we can do in clinic. And then, you know, I hope for all of our clients that they're able to hold off their treatments and help themselves at home. And so we've been working on something exciting the last 10 years that addresses a lot of these issues and in an at-home way. And the skin is, it's a canvas to all that we do. It's people will say, oh, I'll get a facelift. And they're like, oh my God, but you'll still have the same skin. You will still have the same skin. So we love to help people with their skin. It's an important part of the practice. It's an important part of the work. And I think the only thing to note about that is some people will say, if I just keep working on my skin, it will solve all my answers. And that's the other kind of misinformation lie. And so when people come in, we're careful to be like, these are the essentials that you need in your skincare regimen. Buying every single thing on our shelves will not change the lack of bone that's causing the sagging, that's causing the light reflection that you don't like, that's making it look dark. Or say, for example, under the eyes, I'm going to use every eye cream. I'm going to use all the eye cream. I'm going to do all the lasers. I'm going to do all the things. I'm still hollow and dark. And that's, we have to look at the fat. And so I hope for everyone that we're optimizing what we do, being smarter about the products we choose to use, and always looking at that root issue.
Sure. No, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think, honestly, I blame beauty media a little bit for why there's that disconnect here, because we do sell all of these products and the way we write about them as the solution for, you know, XYZ. And in a lot of ways, these products are very helpful. I, of course, have a cabinet full of products that I love. But to your point, at the end of the day, it's the stuff under the skin that is really the driver behind a lot of these changes that we see, whether it's the bone, fat, fascia, muscles, as you've mentioned. And I think that having that reminder for people is a good reminder. People need to know this. They need to understand that you it can help your skin topically, but at the end of the day, it's what's underneath the skin that's going to make the biggest difference.
Yeah, it all works together.
Yeah.
So if we literally go back to the root issue, then that thing you're buying will work when we choose it from that perspective, not like, let me buy that thing and think it's going to solve all my problems.
Sure. I love that, what you just said. Okay, so we have talked about solutions and treatments throughout this episode, whether, you know, it be filler or neurotoxins or lasers. But, you know, I just want to ask you, what are some of your favorite techniques or favorite treatments that you tend to go back to? You know, obviously your practice does work with filler quite a bit and neurotoxins and lasers. Do you have any specific treatments that you tend to use?
We do. There is a nice little quick story here. There is a trademark treatment we have called blanching that is pretty much why I have these clinics now. So it is a treatment for acne scars. It is a treatment for fine lines around the mouth. It's a treatment for anything that's in the dermis that you don't want to look puffy and filled. And it was the first treatment technique that was shown to me abroad. And so I came back and started treating these acne scars, fine lines around the mouth, areas that typically look really bad if not done well, particularly fine lines around the mouth. And so women were sending their friends, oh, have you heard this girl? And they were slipping notes under the door because we were super tiny. And my sister-in-law was doing the reception and they were slipping notes under the door. And that technique, that blanching, is still one of our trademark techniques in terms of how can we solve a problem quickly? And then, you know, how is that helping someone long term? So it is really like, that is one of the things I do love about this field, is that we can sometimes solve problems really quickly, as long as we're, again, looking to what the problem is. And it's our trademark technique because we're able to treat a dermal crease immediately. We use a particular dilution of a hyaluronic acid dermal filler. And instead of filling the line, we create tension on the line. So an analogy can be, if you take a sheet and imagine the sheet is wrinkled up on your upper lip lines and you don't want to look like you're a smoker. I have so many people say to me, I've never smoked and I have these smoker lines. So, and you don't want to, you're ready to start laser, but you don't want to wait 2 years for results. And we'd want to take that sheet and put tension. And so then we use that hyaluronic acid dermal filler to put tension on the line. And because of the technique and because of the way we're doing it and the product choice, we're able to make a smooth plane that doesn't look puffy, is the simplest way to put it. And we're able to do that for acne scars. I have a beautiful case that we did on the site for an actor who he said it was life changing. He felt like he never had the time to do these deep acne lasers, and he was in his 30s, and his acne from a teenager scars were showing up more and more as he lost his, you know, volume and collagen. And so we were able to treat that within two visits, and he was able to go out for castings. And you know, it's a beautiful video that you can see where the scars are smooth and there's not a puffy appearance. So it's a rewarding technique as well to be able to have it.
The other treatment that I wanted to ask you about is in regards to using filler to mimic bone. Just because I think, like, when people hear filler, they tend to think of what it has been used recently, like overfilled lips or overfilled cheekbones. So your technique with filler is much different, especially when you're trying to mimic the bone. So can you just explain that? Because I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's fair for people to be terrified. I always say if I didn't know the work going on inside my clinic, I would also be terrified. There's no way around it. And truthfully, no one is acknowledging all the good work. You know, we had someone in who had all this work, and the next day said on social media, I had a juice. And inside we're all like, oh, how do we end this perpetual cycle of people not telling the truth? But that's for another day. So with bone, what has been very fascinating is if you look in the industry 20 years ago, there were not as many products on the American market. There were more products on the European market. And there are different densities of dermal fillers. There's densities that are that are basically more dense and are going to be more strong to mimic bone. Now, let's throw one more wrench into the situation. If someone puts a bony-like filler not on your bone, but they put it in your skin, you're not going to replicate bone, right? It's going to be in your skin when you go to talk and smile, or maybe it's in the fat pad. It's not where it is meant to be, and that will also lead to an unnatural appearance. So first off, we, in general, try to limit the filler that we're using. We, again, if there's a bone issue, we want to use a bone-like filler. We want to place the filler on bone. If there's a fat issue, we want to use a fat-like filler. We want to place it in the fat pad. And we do that to the best of our ability. There are still variables that can happen. And that is one of the beautiful things about working with dermal fillers, is that they can be dissolved should there be a small issue. And they're dissolved very easily, very, very easily. It's an enzyme. It's a liquid. It is, you know, sometimes it does take more than one session. So, but in terms of the how we're able to adjust it, you know, I'm not opposed to implants and plastic surgery. And we advise people on, hey, this can be done with an implant. This can be done with a filler. Here's kind of the positives. Here's the negatives of either. And I think, you know, people deserve to be able to choose for themselves what is best for them financially, physically, all the things. But that's the difference with bone and fillers. And to throw one more thing in, we are also using regenerative medicine. We're using products that can build back your own collagen. We're using products that can build back your own fat. We're using growth factors, EGF. We're really fascinated by EGF as an ability to help with collagen matrix as well. And so we are still looking at ways to help people retain and prevent and not just, you know, always be in treatment mode.
Yeah. And when you say that you're using these, does that mean in skincare? Does that mean, you know, in other treatments? How are people using them?
We do have something exciting. We've been working with growth factors for a long time in clinic. I've been very fascinated by their ability to take a treatment, whether it be injectable or laser, and cut someone's healing time in half. And that, working in two very busy cities, that's something that we've been using for years, and we're excited to be able to bring it to people that they can use in an at-home way. And we talk about it a lot on the site too. It's something that we have a proprietary growth factor that we incorporate into most of our treatments in the office. So we are adding an element of always that prevention, that regenerative medicine that again, we want to treat, but we really also want to heal. We want to preserve. And so we're always looking at ways to add in that element to the work that we're doing.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I think the work around regenerative skincare and regenerative aesthetics is, I mean, it's the future of skincare in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's so fascinating. I wanted to chat with you about how people can find a responsible, either dermatologist or aesthetic specialist to help them get these results if they don't live in a place like New York or LA. Because, you know, I think a lot of people would love to have the results that you're talking about. You know, I just want to look like myself. I just want to look like myself for longer. That is something that I think a lot of people out there aspire to, but you know, perhaps they don't have the ability to see you or see your clinic, or you know, how do they get that?
Yeah, so in the book coming out, we do have a nice section on some inside information that you can know to empower yourself when you go to an aesthetics clinic or dermatology clinic or a plastic surgeon's office to arm yourself with. And then we did include a page in there, which is top questions to ask a provider in your area that can help you to figure out their expertise. I will say it's really nice for you to be able to come to a visit as an informed client or patient. Even people that cannot see us, our website is a huge wealth of just teaching, learning, and information. And you can take that information. For example, how I talked about using Botox instead of just for wrinkles, but muscle retraining, you can take that information and go to a clinic by you and then be able to have a conversation that says, okay, I understand I want to get rid of these 11 lines. How can you help me understand? I want to use Botox, but how will this Botox for this 11 lines affect me in 2, 5, or 10 years? Will something else kind of compensate? So that's a very simple question that you can ask. And if your provider is not able to answer, that's a good way for you to be able, because what you're basically trying to tell is what is your provider's expertise? And you have to have a little bit of knowledge to come to the game so that you know when they say something back to you, how it's landing. You know, like, are they able to talk about using Botox for muscle retraining, or are they only able to talk to you about using Botox for wrinkles? It doesn't mean they're a bad provider, 100%. It just means that their way they're practicing, if you're wanting this functional approach, isn't that. And so what you're trying to do is you're not trying to become, it's taken me 20 years to become an expert provider. You're not trying to become the expert provider who is dictating all your care. That's why we go to great doctors. That's why we seek out, all of us seek out experts in our fields, because it takes time to study. It takes people looking at what they're doing, evaluating, making mistakes, you know, redirecting. And so the goal is not that you become the expert provider, but that you have a baseline knowledge and then that you're able to tell if the provider is an expert for your level, you know? So quick question you can always ask is, how will the treatment today affect my face in 2, 5, or 10 years? That's one great question, simple. I have a few more if you feel ready.
I'm so ready.
Okay. The second is, how will this treatment impact my genetics of aging? Are we addressing any root issues here? Are we correcting bone? Are we correcting muscle? If so, how? So that's question number two. Question number three, can you help me understand my unique genetics of aging? For example, many people come into the clinic and they say, I don't like the fat under my chin. Do something with it. So can you help me understand my genetics of aging? Is the fat under my chin purely a fat issue? Or is there also a lack of chin structure that is causing it to look like there's more fat than there actually is? Again, you don't have to be the one knowing that. You really probably shouldn't. That's your way to tell if the person you're working with has that information for you. And there are 100% absolutely people who believe in practicing this way. I meet them at conferences. I meet them. And it's just, I would say it takes a little more looking because, you know, I'm American. I love American culture. I love that we're like, let's solve and let's be fast and let's be efficient. But that is the direction that this industry became versus a more holistic, slow way, which is so true of, you know, European food and culture. And so we always say this is the slow aging movement in our clinic. So question number four, how can I be more preventative with my unique genetics of aging? For example, am I more prone to fat loss? Am I more prone to muscle issues and need what, or am I more prone to bone and therefore need more of that? So again, we're going to be back in that lot of information stage. You don't need you don't need to know these answers, but it's a good question to ask. If someone cannot talk with you about how what you're doing today will affect you later or be preventative, then that's a good way to see what their level of expertise is. And then the last one is the toughest one. It's the hardest one. And it's the one that we still work on in my clinic and we have meetings about. It's, where do I start? What is the most important place to start? Because anyone can come into a clinic and be like, you have all these issues. You should do all these things, which I think perpetuates a cycle of anxiety and worry. And then that is a source of aging. We should not be telling you have to do all these things. Yes, there are issues going on in your bone level, your muscle level, your connective tissue level. Okay, now I'm the guide with the experience and I'm going to let you know here is our best place to start. So in our clinics, our motto for teaching clinicians is we want to start with the highest return on investment. And for us, return on investment means path of least resistance is what we call it, and also forward thinking. path of least resistance is what is going to make the most benefit to your genetics of aging, have the least risk, and also make the most impact for the least amount of cost. And that's where we start, and then start checking things off.
I mean, that whole list of questions is so fascinating to me, and questions that I have never even thought to ask of somebody, but they're pivotal in helping you find a partner in this. And I think that's what is like, as you were talking about this, I'm like, oh, like these are questions that you ask of somebody when you're like, I want to find somebody who I am going to be working with long term, and we're going to be in this together. And I think that is so important, no matter if you're talking about aesthetic medicine, overall physicians, you know, your overall health, finding a physician for your overall health, or, you know, any type of medicine you get into, you need to find a partner in this. And I think that's why these questions are so fascinating to me.
Our interpretation of how to create the ideal outcome is to follow this method. And you're right, it's a partnership 100%.
Yeah. Okay, so the last thing I always talk to my guests about is how they take care of themselves. You know, this can be, you know, what treatments you do, but it can also be what skincare routine you have, as well as how you take care of yourself as a whole. You know, as we've talked throughout this entire episode, is everything's connected, and, you know, what you eat, how you work out, how you sleep, all of these things play a huge role in our aging. So, you know, I would just love to hear how you take care of yourself.
So I'm 40, about to be 40, and the way I take care of myself in the last 5 years has changed drastically, and I've always loved wellness, and there was a point where I started to track people and started to say, oh, wow, and my father and sister are both psychologists, both, and one working at UCLA, so I've also been looking at it from a psychological lens, that it's important to take care of ourselves. But in the wellness movement, it's also become a do more, you'll feel better. And then we're caught in the cycle of doing more. And it's not really also landing as self-love, which is kind of where it was supposed to start out as, like, fill our cup, you know, like wear an outfit you love, that's self-love. Go take care of your face, that can be self-love. But if we get caught in the cycle of doing, We miss that whole piece. So what I say is that I have a healthy aging plan and I follow a skincare routine, but I actually do less. I'm pretty optimized and effective at what I do. And I have a little bit more understanding. Okay, like this is, I'm not trying to do it all. That's what I'll also say. And I think that holistic approach where we're looking at like the mental state, the physical state, the spiritual state. I'm trying to cultivate more of that. And I do have guides. I have my own guides that help me. You know, I have my own psychologist and I struggle with feeling like I'm not grounded and I'm too stressed and all those things. And I have nights where I do have the full skincare regimen, but I do have my core. That's what something that was really excited for me to bring to people was some core things that, so we're not like, you need to do more and then you'll look better and your skin will be better. It was like, yes, that is true and it's not wrong, but there also is a space for doing less and being optimized and effective at root causes and at causes. And so that's really where my personal practice is at, is healthy aging plan, taking care of myself, and trying not to get caught in the cycle of more, you know, whether it be infrared sauna and this and that, and, you know, it's more is not always better. And even in this field, we can say that.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's something that I certainly struggle with, where I'm constantly like, I'm writing about a new wellness trend, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, well, I have to do this now too.
I mean, again, that's why I really love training clinicians and guides that can help people. That last question, like, where do I start? How do I be thoughtful in my treatment? You know, how do I treat and how do I pull back? And there's moments, I think we all maybe go through this. Like, there were moments in my life I needed to really focus in on my psychological health and like really spend that time and doing it more. And then I was able to pull back and be more in maintenance mode. And that is often also what we'll see in aesthetics. We're talking to people generally that are looking at it through this lens. So they're like, I never thought I would do anything. I'm so afraid. Those are a lot of our clients that come to us. And so they come to us in a state of, we call it catch-up mode, or they come and their gas tank is all the way empty. And they're like, oh, and so I say, okay, we're going to fill up your gas tank in stages, and then you'll come see me less. And we'll just have to do that upper top up, you know? So I think that is also something to just acknowledge, is that there's times where maybe we do a lot and then we scale back.
Yeah. I mean, it's like our bodies, you know, our bodies have to go into recovery mode every once in a while. And it's beneficial to do that, you know, you need recovery mode, and our bodies are designed to function that way. So
that's why I love growth factors. That's why epidermal growth factor, I've always said, like, we are so obsessed with treating, we also need to look at the healing.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think that's such a great note to end on. And I learned so much, even though I have had the pleasure of, you know, chatting with you before. I feel like every time I chat with you, I learn so much. So thank you so much for joining me today. This was such a fascinating episode. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. For more beauty content from the team at MindBodyGreen, you can always read along with our content at mindbodygreen.com, follow us on social media, and of course, tune into next week's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to rate and review us. And if you ever want to reach out with questions or insights or thoughts, you can find me on Instagram at alex_blair_. Thanks so much for your time.